Yeah, sure, Daryl. I can go first. I was just out at the flow front. I got there about 9 o'clock this morning. And between 5 p.m. last night and 9 a.m. this morning, the flow advanced about 140 meters, which is an advance rate of around roughly 10 meters per hour. So, you know, in the 10 to 15 yards per hour sort of range, which is what the flow has been doing now for the last about 2 or 3 days. So conditions there are much the same as they have been over the past few days. The flow front is about 300 meters past Paw Street. And when we were there, it had just crossed through the Bahola Cemetery. So it crossed over the cemetery and was coming out the lower end of the cemetery. Let's see. I also checked the southeast lobe, which is the second lobe active, which is southeast of this narrow finger that was going through the cemetery. That lobe advanced about 50 meters from my mapping yesterday, about 24 hours. So that particular lobe is moving very slowly. And at the moment, from where the flow front is to the cemetery, it's about 750 meters from the Bahola Village Road.
Aloha Chan, it's me, Lisa Lincoln with Hawaii News Now. Would you say that the flow front is still at that estimated 150-yard width that you had mentioned in the update that was released at 9 a.m.?
Right. Toward the flow front right now, the flow has widened out quite a bit, and it may be that the flow front is actually splitting into two different fingers. So the particular part of the front that was advancing into the cemetery was perhaps 30 yards across, but if you extend across the entire active front, there's additional activity to the southeast of the part of the flow in the cemetery, and together those two are probably about 150 yards of total length along the active front, but it does look like it might be splitting into two different fingers. If those two fingers do pan out, if there's a second finger a little bit to the south of the one in the cemetery, likely they will both end up meeting again further down. So.
Tim, this is Becky Bohr with the Associated Press. How close at this point, you mentioned about 750 meters from Bahoa Village Road, about how far from structures, including structures of any kind, including homes?
Yeah, that'll be a question you'll have to ask Daryl. I'm not familiar with where the structures are.
I'm sorry, Anson, just to clarify, I believe you said it was 250 meters from Pahoa Village Road, right?
No, 750. 750.
Okay, thank you very much.
So that's the newest update, so I guess back to you, Daryl.
Thanks, Tim.
Can I ask one quick question? This is Colin Stewart with the Tribune Herald. Can I ask you what was the fire situation looking like? Was the vegetation parallel smoke and fire?
That'll probably be best answered by Daryl. What burning I saw was limited just to where the lawn is actually touching vegetation.
Thank you. If I could ask one more question for Tim, Josh Pacheco from Big Island Now and Pacific Media Group. You mentioned lava crossing into the cemetery. Yesterday we were told kind of along that cemetery driveway. Could you possibly give us a time of when the lava actually crossed into the cemetery?
I don't know what time that was. It may be that information that Daryl has from his morning overflight. When I arrived at 9 o'clock this morning at the cemetery, it had just finished passing through the cemetery. So I don't know when it actually reached at the upper end of the cemetery.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, good morning. This is Daryl. So as Tim shared, we did an overflight this morning. We got up in the area probably just around 6:30. The flow finger that, as he mentioned, went through the cemetery was just entering the cemetery and was probably into the cemetery by about 20 yards at the most. It was just starting to enter through the cemetery grounds and make its way eastward through the property. So I would estimate, based on that, it probably started to enter the cemetery boundary, the property itself, probably about 2 hours prior, so maybe around 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, based on the rate of advancement and how far it was into the cemetery when we got on site.
You never know.
As far as the question regarding the fire issue, right now the area has been getting pretty good rain, and it's in an area where there's a lot of former pasture grass. The grass is tall, but it's very green, very lush. So only what's burning is what's basically in contact, direct contact with the advancing flow. Right now, further back, where it had crossed over Apache Street, this morning there was almost no activity whatsoever that was producing any smoke back there on the road, the asphalt area. So for those that might be concerned about what kind of smoke was coming up as far as any hazardous material, there was nothing being produced back by the roadway at this time. And when it did cross Apache Street yesterday early morning, the smoke, fortunately, was rising straight up and being pushed by a northeast wind right over Apache Street, over all unpopulated areas, and dispersing pretty fairly well. So, again, there's right now we haven't had issues with regards to smoke causing any problems so far, but we are preparing the community as it advances, as it enters area of more population and structures and things in people's backyards. We could see smoke conditions presenting with issues, and our latest messages are telling people that smoke conditions could intensify or worsen, and those who are sensitive or who have respiratory problems should consider alternatives as well as staying indoors when the conditions pick up. I've been speaking with the National Weather Service every morning and getting the latest forecast for the winds. What's forecasted for today is fairly strong trades, so out of the northeast at about 10 to 15 miles per hour, and that's what we've been seeing on the ground. As Tim already said, the flow is advancing at about 10 meters per hour, so we're watching it very closely. And as he described, you know, you have an advancing front that's fairly narrow, and I guess I would describe it almost like a capital L, where there's a finger pulling forward and then a lobe off to the side that's a little wider, but has the potential of also hooking in and becoming another advancing finger as well. But right now it's more or less lateral from the advancing finger front and fairly wide altogether. We also see activity further back, still behind Apache Street or on the Malka side of Apache Street. There was a finger early on that had broke off, or a breakout that had pulled to the southeast, and it's still moving and active back there within the forest line. Was it still active later this morning, Tim, just so I say the right thing?
Yeah, I walked around that finger just about an hour ago, and it was still active, and I can still see smoke from where I'm sitting right now. That's the one I said moved about 50 meters in the past 24 hours. And it's inflated quite substantially. It's probably 3 to 4 meters, so roughly 10 to 12 feet inflation on that lobe out there. A lot of down trees on top of the flow as well.
Yeah. And right now, Helco's poll, I'm not sure if we have anybody from Helco online that would want to comment, but Helco's poll with the protective measure down there on Apache Street. So far, it's only one pole that has been impacted by the flow. The protective measure is in place, and around that pole this morning, it looked fairly, I don't want to use the word cold, because subsurface, I don't know what the temperatures were, but there was obviously no burning on the surface, no red glow, no smoke around the pole this morning. But yeah, so Helco's online, they can share what they've been monitoring and measuring as far as any temperatures at the pole, but it appears that right now the lava has moved around what they set up as a protective measure. And it appears to be helping with the life of the pole. But as Tim pointed out, as the lava inflates, the pad moves higher and higher, and we'll just have to see if it's going to affect the pole or if there's going to be any radiant heat affecting the lines. But it doesn't appear so.
And Daryl, this is Rhea. I'm on line if anyone has any questions.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. So that's what our observations were when we did the overflight. We'll be doing another one shortly afternoon. Our plan is to do 3 flights at this point per day, as well as maintaining support of HVO on the ground. And if they need any monitoring through the night, we have personnel actually going out there during the night, taking coordinates of the advancing flow so we can track its movement 24/7. And if we see any kind of significant advancement rate, then we'll be letting the residents know. I actually went out and met with those 2 structures that are closest to the flow they are probably at least, I would estimate, over 300 yards from the flow front in a northeast direction from the flow front. There's two homes there, or two properties. The closest home, the residents were there, and they indicated that they have been, obviously, all this time preparing at night. Now they can actually see the flow front from their balcony, and they took us up and showed us that. So it's visible from their home, and they are prepared for their evacuation when the time comes. So I'm not sure if anybody has any questions for me.
Can you specify exactly how close you said that they were to those two structures at this time?
Well, there's actually one structure that's closest, and that's the one that's furthest upslope, closest to the advancing flow. And I would have to estimate from where I was at on their property as well as from the air, it appears to be about at least 300 yards, if not more. And this afternoon, when we go back up, I'll be actually taking coordinates from their home. One reason why we haven't been flying low and over structures and taking coordinates is we didn't want to disturb the residents. They have enough to deal with right now, but I talked to them, let them know, and they were very comfortable with us flying lower and getting some coordinates, as well as we also got their support and permission that HVO is welcome on their property to come up and look at the topography and terrain and, take a look at how the slope is in their areas, because obviously with the development or their use of the land, they've cleared away vegetation. It might give an idea of how the topography looks. So they've opened that up to HVO as well. So we'll have people on the ground in those areas that could give you better distances when we get the coordinates.
Daryl, it's Clayton at ABC. I'm sorry if you've covered this already. I joined late. But is Tuesday still the target date for when you are telling people to be ready to go by? And have your folks been expanding the number of residents that they're notifying today?
Yes, Tuesday is still looking like our schedule, but we are preparing to move that as necessary. If anything, if the flow rate picks up, to advance that notification or that trigger point. The CERT team, along with our staff yesterday and staff from the mayor's office, did a fairly comprehensive area notification in not only the primary but the secondary areas that could be affected for an evacuation. So at this day, today, we didn't need to go back out because they were able to yesterday cover the two areas that we wanted to, obviously the primary, and then had enough time to do the secondary. I apologize, I don't have the total number of homes. We're right now compiling all the notes for the contacts with those residents. Probably the most significant comment that was shared out there, the most consistent comment, was that people have been preparing, although this is not new or a surprise, it was definitely a disappointment and something maybe heartbreaking to hear that we're moving closer to the point where it looks like it's inevitable that the flow will be coming in the community. So they were all definitely open about their preparations and also open that they hoped that things wouldn't come to this point.
Daryl, can you, this is Becky Bohr with the Associated Press, can you clarify for us, in the primary and secondary area, you said you didn't have a total number of homes. Do you have an estimate on how many people are potentially affected? And is the primary and secondary area most of or just a portion of the town itself?
The primary and secondary are a portion of the town, and it would be those areas that were within the direct flow path based on its current location and forecasted track along those steepest lines of descent. It's a fairly wide. What we did is we broke the community up into sections for the notification based on areas of likely impact, as well as the adjacent properties and downslope properties. So they're fairly substantial areas running from all the way from the Apa Street, if you can find that on your map, on Boho Village Road, all the way over to the Post Office Road on the south side. And it's those properties between that corridor primarily on the west or Malka side of the roadway, and also the properties initially on the lower or east side of the Boho Village Road. So there's no less than, I would say, 50 to 60 structures in there as far as residents, inclusive of some businesses in that same area, some bed and breakfasts. So there's a large number as far as the portion of the community, the impact that this has potentially with not just the lava flow going through but the smoke and other things may be fairly significant depending what starts to burn as it's moving through. If it's limited to just vegetation, as was asked earlier, versus if it's going to be involving any structures, any abandoned vehicles, any hazardous material, then the impact area would obviously widen based on what we see burning. Part of that door-to-door assessment yesterday, or that contact, was to identify some properties that might present with some special issues as far as things burning. So we've already identified and are watching it as it moves closer to these properties. It's going to be really important that as it continues to advance, we stay really close with HVO and have a good sense of where it might be going through properties and if there are any special issues on those properties.
Hi, this is Christine with NBC. Can I ask you one quick question? In terms of access from Kona to Hilo, what is the best option right now? Is anything blocked off? We're just trying to figure out when we're sending people there kind of what the best way is.
There are no major road closures between Kona and Hilo. Did I understand your question right?
Yes, that's correct. You got it. Okay, so yep. No major road closures?
That's correct.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Sure.
And one other quick question, sorry, Becky Board, the Associated Press. In the lava flow entering the cemetery, was that, did it cover over grave sites? Was it in a part of the cemetery where there weren't grave sites?
Yeah, this is Daryl. It was an active cemetery, so there were grave sites. Just sharing a personal perspective from mine, it was just very saddening to see the flow cross over and taking out the grave sites, because at one point we could see one of the larger monuments actually protruding through the lava flow as it went through. So, yes, it is an active cemetery with burials, and it's actually predominantly a Buddhist cemetery, and it was associated with one of the local Buddhist sects and church here. So they did have a closing ceremony in anticipation of this, and again, they've been preparing for that as well.
This is a question for Daryl. This is Molly from Hawaii Public Radio. I was wondering, when you guys have been sending crews to the homes of people that you're notifying about evacuations, what are you hearing as far as where are they planning to go? Are most of them going to stay with family and other places? Are they going to be going to shelters that you might be opening up?
Sure. You know, one of the other reasons why we wanted to go door-to-door was to get that exact information or that question asked, because it would help our Red Cross partners to develop a strategy and identify what logistics they would need to provide for sheltering. Overwhelmingly, I would say better than 95%+ of the contacts made, people have already identified alternatives for themselves, and there was very, very few residents or individuals saying that they would go to a shelter. I want to say less than a handful identified the possibility of going to a shelter, and I think a lot of it is waiting to see how this plays out and if it does affect their individual home or dwelling. But the other thing is, when we do open up a shelter, it will not only be for those individuals who will be directly affected by the lava flow as it comes through, but if the smoke conditions are causing problems, at least on a temporary basis, having the shelter open so people can get some relief if they need to, is get out of the area where the smoke is, be at the shelter for the duration that the flow passes through, and then when the smoke conditions improve, then they could return home if it's safe to do so. So, I want to, again, just answer your question. The vast majority have said that they have already identified their alternative site to relocate to, whether it's with family members, friends, or they've identified another opportunity for either a home or a rental.
Great. Thank you, Daryl.
And this is Christine with NBC again. One more quick question, and you might have mentioned this, I had to separate for just a second earlier, but we were wondering about any methane explosions on the leading edge, and if you guys were seeing a lot of these.
Yes, we have been seeing frequent methane explosions. Let's say frequent, every several minutes they'll have one, and they range as far as their magnitude or intensity. And those are some of the safety hazards that we are trying to, I guess, emphasize when we're questioned about why aren't we letting people in there for access and viewing. There are so many safety concerns, and it's not that we are not sensitive or don't appreciate the significance of this event and the desire that people have to view it, because it is historical as well as a very unique natural phenomenon. But there are so many safety concerns out there besides the methane explosions. You know, HELCO needs to have the ability to monitor their protective measure, and we're hoping that there's no impact and it basically persists or survives the continued activity subsurface at the flow edge where it wrapped the pole. But we don't want to expose anyone to any risk out there if, for some reason, we're not certain of the stability of the pole, and if it should come down, we don't want anybody in the area. So that's another hazard. Besides the smoke and the fumes and allowing the staff at HVO to do their job and allow our responders to do our job. So I would just ask for everybody's patience and understanding with that, because there are many safety concerns out there, as well as to consider what the community, right now, to access the flow, it would require going through residential subdivisions. These are the same subdivisions that people are trying to prepare for an evacuation. And they'd like to do that without any interference, and as well as it's a very trying experience if anybody's ever experienced evacuating. So we're trying to support those residents as well. So if everyone could just be patient with the viewing, we've tried to accommodate better access by air, and we will continue to weigh the pros and cons with ground access, but right now it's restricted because of the safety concerns and what we're preparing for the evacuation.
And can you kind of, sorry, one more quick question related to that. Just explain, I guess, very simply, what causes the methane explosions specifically?
Sure, and I know Janet would probably be a better source. I would just, in case she's not online, just say that the decomposing organic material that's subsurface, whether it be vegetation or other things, it's just a natural byproduct of decomposition that could be under the surface. And again, I'll let Janet share more on that.
Daryl, you're right. It has to do with the decomposing vegetation, and it produces methane gas, and the methane gas can travel subsurface far out from the leading edge of the lava flow. It's not right below the lava flow. It can travel out beyond in many different directions and directions that are unknown to us. And if it then accumulates in a pocket and ignites, it makes an explosion. And I can tell you, I was in the field yesterday, and as many years as I've spent working around active lava flows, it was a bit unnerving yesterday just how many methane blasts we were hearing, one of which kind of passed right through where we were standing. And at the time that it happened, it was such a rumble, I thought it was a thunder, and that we were about to be struck by lightning. That's how noisy it was, and it was a pretty unnerving experience. And they're just going off all around, beyond the margins of the leading edge of the flow.
And Jenny, maybe you can, this is Darrell again, if you could also maybe add that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but as it enters residential areas, because many of these homes are on either cesspools or septic systems, that's another source for methane in a much higher concentration, possibly, that would also present with an explosion hazard.
That's correct. Yeah, that is a possibility.